You're listening to the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on June 7, 2016. My guest today is a talented web developer, designer, artist, and all-around Renaissance man. He's also a former coworker and longtime friend, John Plant. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So, can you introduce yourself to the listeners? Tell me a bit about your background and how it led you to where you are now in your career.
Well, sure. Let's start. Let's see. Where should we start? How about the 1850s?
I was a maybe cowboy. A bit too far.
I went to college at a college in Columbus who specializes in art and design. I won't name names, but I was interested in computer animation at the time. Toy Story had just come out, and it seemed like it was an opportunity to get in on the ground floor on that type of animation. I found myself in a unit called Media Studies, which did have some animation, including an experimental animation class where we used Macromedia Director to make little Shockwave movies, and I would make little interactive storybook type things where you'd click on things and there'd be a little animation and a little audio, what have you. This was right around the time that World Wide Web was kind of a thing, and kind of moved into that. I was at a .com in 1999.
Good timing.
Yeah, for a couple of years. I kind of taught myself classic ASP. If you recall, that's where they had introduced something called ASP, and everyone hated the taste, so they brought back the original under the name classic ASP. It was to compete with Pepsi. You remember that?
Yep, got it.
But anyhow, just as a means to be less dependent on developers, as if you're just a web designer, it's difficult to control the entire product. For the last 10 years, I've been at the Ohio State University, and have learned enough to be especially dangerous when it comes to actual development, but still staying active with user interfaces.
You're far too humble. I mean, what you're basically saying is you taught yourself to be a developer with a design background. And I worked with you for several years, and it was very impressive to see the sort of things you produce. So, and since I've known you, you've always been sort of a pioneer of CSS and HTML techniques. And you introduced me to something called BEM. B-E-M? Is that how you say it? No. What is BEM?
So BEM is a methodology for naming CSS classes, essentially, which sort of informs your overall client-side markup. It stands for Block Element Modifier. You identify a logical grouping of elements. Suppose you have a list. Have you supposed it yet, Matt?
I'm imagining it right now.
Okay, good. and we call this, list a list. So we'll give it a class called list, and that's the block. And then all the subsequent elements that relate to that block are elements. and we delineate those class names with a double underscore. So so a list item would be list underscore underscore item. If there was a hyperlink inside that list, it would be list underscore underscore link, for example. One thing we don't do is represent the entire hierarchy of elements. We're just concerned about, you know, what is the primary block, and then all the separate elements within it. Now, that double underscore is a bit controversial. Some people roll their own syntax and make it a single underscore or one dash or that sort of thing. So that's block and element. Now there's one final piece, which is modifier. And that's if there's a variation to your block. So some visual style that changes based on some circumstances. And what you would do is, in addition to saying class equals list, your block, you'd add another class, which would be list dash dash. We use double dashes to delineate modifiers. And then variation, whatever the variation name, list dash dash variation.
Interesting. So how did you find BEM, and what is it that you like about it?
I was working with a developer trying to change a style one day, and we looked at the markup and identified a class that was applied to that element. We found it in the CSS. We changed the color or something, and refreshed, and nothing happened. The color didn't change, and as it turns out, there was some other rule somewhere else, maybe on that same CSS file, maybe somewhere else, that was overriding that color declaration.
This sounds like my entire career trying to work with CSS.
There you go. And it is a pain. So this is the problem with CSS specificity, in that elements with higher specificity win, so to speak. And I could go more into CSS specificity if you're out of sleeping pills.
So how long have you been using this, and are you seeing the benefits of it in general?
Yeah, I've been using it about a year, and it's been helpful in communicating markup standards to a team of, we got 7 developers here, and we've been working on sort of componentization. So it helps developers think, is this thing that I'm working on a one-off implementation, or is this something that can be added to our pattern library? But you know, in general, you're hoping to have a standard, because the alternative is, I need to add a new class. Where do I even put it? Do I put it on the top of this page, on the bottom? So you need some standard, the BEM standard has a lot of nice rules that are pretty easy to follow.
Can you compare BEM to the SAS or LESS tools? Are they related in any way, compatible, etc.?
They're not. So BEM is not a preprocessor. It's just a naming convention. So you can use it with whatever CSS preprocessor you want, so that's they're compatible, but they're not really related.
Okay. So you've mentioned that this is helpful to communicate with the developers and your team. So who should be learning BEM? Is it designers or web developers in general? Is it the whole team should be learning this?
It's everyone that touches markup or CSS. So if you've got a developer who's creating some sort of component, they need to know that that this is a pre-existing component that we've already defined in our CSS. It kind of goes into the whole world of having a UI style guide or pattern library. So they need to be aware of all that, and they need to understand how to apply those styles correctly.
Very cool. So where should I go to start learning about BEM?
Well, as I had discovered it through a guy named Harry Roberts has a blog, CSSWizardry.com. As I understand it, he is a wizard of some type. It says so right in the URL. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I should mention is that in addition to sort of rolling your own framework, there are pre-existing CSS frameworks that you could use on your team, not unlike Bootstrap, one of which is called Inuit CSS.
Is that using the BEM standard?
Correct.
It is. Okay. Interesting. I'll put some of these links in the show notes so you guys can check them out.
I should mention one other thing that I think is really cool, particularly about Harry Roberts' implementation of BEM, and there are a lot of different variations of it, is he recommended organization of all of your classes by namespace. So he's got little single character namespaces. So O-whatever, block, underscore, underscore, modifier. O would refer to an object, so a sort of a implementation-specific layout kind of object, versus C, dash, for a component. U dash for utility, which is something that you see in a lot of other CSS frameworks. A utility is something that has a single purpose. For example, aligning to the right or aligning to the left. So you can control sort of the implementation of a component by using just a utility. There's a S dash namespace for scope, and I like this one in dynamically generated content, so content coming out of our CMS. I don't really want to riddle our database with class names that may not be applicable in a couple years. So what you can do is you define all of your virgin elements inside a scope. I'll use a S-editor as a scope for everything inside that. And then finally, a JS prefix for JavaScript hooks. So this is the idea of decoupling your JavaScript from your styles, so that how something looks and how it behaves are unrelated.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely seen that before, the JavaScript in particular, to set aside the classes that are important to design as opposed to classes that are important for behavior. So, cool. Anything you want to plug? Any websites or anything, any contact information you want to put out there before we wrap things up?
I do not.
You don't want to be contacted in any way?
Go to CSSWizardry.com and read some of Harry Roberts' blog posts. They were very interesting and helpful in wrapping my mind around this concept.
My guest today has been John Plant. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Matt.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves, 2016. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to CrossCuttingConcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. The hosting for this podcast is made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Skype and Audacity. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy their music on Amazon or iTunes.